The UN General Assembly is underway in New York City on its 75th birthday. However, the annual event is unlike any before, with world leaders delivering their addresses via pre-recorded video speeches. US President Donald Trump took the opportunity to criticize China's role in the pandemic.
We must hold accountable the nation which unleashed this plague onto the world, China. In the earliest days of the virus, China locked down travel domestically while allowing flights to leave China and infect the world. China condemned my travel ban on their country, even as they canceled domestic flights and locked citizens in their homes. The Chinese government and the World Health Organization, which is virtually controlled by China, falsely declared that there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission. Later, they falsely said people without symptoms would not spread the disease. The United Nations must hold China accountable for their actions.
And Russian President Vladimir Putin took the opportunity to highlight his concerns of the abuse of technology to breach people's right to privacy and security. This smacks of some hypocrisy given the level of Russian interference in the last US election.
The pandemic has also pinpointed a series of ethical, technological, and humanitarian matters. For instance, advanced digital technologies helped quickly reorganize education, trade, and services. However, just like any other innovation, digital technologies tend to spread uncontrollably and, just like conventional weapons, can fall into the hands of various radicals and extremists, not only in the regional conflict zones, but also in quite prosperous countries, thus engendering enormous risks. In this regard, matters related to cybersecurity and the use of advanced digital technology also deserve most serious deliberation within the UN. It is important to hear and appreciate the concerns of people over the protection of their rights, such as the right to privacy, property, and security in the new era.
It sounds like he had his tongue firmly placed in his cheek. Now, contrary to Donald Trump, China's president Xi Jinping struck a decidedly inclusive note, explaining that we're all members of the same big family.
We should reject attempts to build blocks to keep others out and oppose a zero-sum approach. We should see each other as members of the same big family, pursue win-win cooperation, and rise above ideological disputes and not fall into the trap of clash of civilizations. More importantly, we should respect a country's independent choice of development path and model. The world is diverse in nature. We should turn this diversity into a constant source of inspiration, driving human advancements. This will ensure that human civilizations remain colorful and diversified. Second, COVID-19 reminds us that the economic globalization is an indisputable reality and a historical trend. Burying one's head in the sand like an ostrich in the face of economic globalization, or trying to fight it with Don Quixote's lance, goes against the trend of history. Let this be clear, the world will never return to isolation, and no one can sever the ties between countries.
We're joined now by Noel Doerr, former Irish ambassador to the United Nations from 1980 to 1983, and Noel was also Ireland's representative on the UN Security Council during his time at the UN. Noel, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Have you ever seen the like of this before?
No, I haven't. I've been at the UN for many years. Apart from being posted there in the early 1980s, as you said, I attended the General Assembly, the start of the General Assembly, very often in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, and even into the 1990s. And I've never seen anything like this. It's a strange occasion. It's the 75th anniversary of the founding of the UN, a time to improve it for the future. It's fragile but necessary. But I'm afraid the general debate isn't going to contribute a lot to that. It's apparently, as far as I understand it, done remotely. Everybody can, all the major leaders contribute a video, and the people in the General Assembly Hall are just there watching the video, one from each delegation. However, the main work of the UN is not the General Assembly debate. You probably know that the Assembly meets in its annual session for 3 months every year, beginning in September and finishing in mid-December. And it traditionally begins with this general debate where world leaders can set out their country's policies, but the real work is done over the following 3 months. So all is not lost, but I'm afraid the general debate isn't going to contribute much.
The difference in having these pre-recorded addresses, presumably submitted in time for the tech people in the UN building to get everything organised, it means that there's no sense of debate. You know, if one leader says X, the other can't respond with Y, because these are all pre-recorded. But was it ever thus? Were they always set pieces, pre-scripted, and never any sense of real debate?
That is true for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the general debate. That's, as I said, the formal proceedings. And different leaders, prime ministers, foreign ministers, heads of state and so on, would attend. Quite often they're speaking to their home audiences as much as to the audience in the assembly, in fact, usually more so. But apart from that, those 3 weeks were a great time for mingling in the corridors, meeting in separate meetings, private meetings and so on. I've many times been with an Irish foreign minister who might avail of the presence of other foreign ministers or leaders to have a series of meetings in corners of the lounges or in small rooms and so on with a few officials on each side. And it was a great opportunity for exchanges with people that otherwise you'd have to travel across the world to meet. So that, for smaller countries, was terribly important. But it was also important because sometimes the major leaders of the major countries might meet each other there without the formality of a set-piece summit. For instance, I believe last year President Macron was trying to patch up something between Iran and the United States or do something of that kind in person. So the fact that leaders, so many leaders are present, had a great lubricant effect, so to speak. It was that rather than the formal set-piece speeches in the assembly that mattered. But of course, they mattered to each country. Each wanted to set out its foreign policy for the 3 months ahead, indeed for the world in general. But often, as I said, it was as much addressed to a home audience as it was to the audience in the assembly. But it was the informal meetings and the opportunity for those meetings that was of greatest importance.
Now, we like to think of the United Nations as a place where global interests will take precedence over national interests. But there's no doubt that there is a plethora of so-called strong men around the world who are primarily looking after their own nation's interests. Donald Trump and Bolsonaro, Putin, Xi, Erdogan, just to name a few, all of whom will have or have made contributions. But was it ever thus? I mean, there were always strong men, and usually men, who addressed the United Nations in the past.
That's true, but I think the wisest words about the UN and about the present state of the world that I know of were spoken by Kofi Annan, the previous Secretary General, in the year 2000 in relation to the millennium year. He said it very simply, in addition to the separate responsibilities that each state bears towards its own society, states are collectively the custodians of our common life on this planet. And that's the big difference today. The UN started in 1945 as a continuation of the wartime alliance. The 50 countries that founded it were all allies in the war against Hitler and Japan, and imperialist Japan. So it was an alliance going to deal with aggression in the future. But it's turned into something very, very different because of the end of colonialism and the move to independence of so many countries, scores and scores of countries. Through the second half of the 20th century, it's now a universal organization of states. There are about 200 states in the world, and all except the tiniest are members of the UN, and even the tiny ones are observers. So it's an organization which reflects the world in all its diversity, but it also, as Kofi Annan said, as states, and we're going to be states, independent states, I suppose, for the foreseeable future. But there is no overall authority in the world. So states have to act together as custodians of our common life on the planet. And God knows, in recent times, we've become aware how much the planet is one. The sort of iconic image of that was the view from space in the 1960s, when you look back and you could see the Earth as a single blue planet. And you realize that it's the only place in the whole universe that we know that life of any kind exists. So states have to act as custodians in relation to climate, in relation to the virus, and of course, in relation to war and peace, economic development, so many other things. The only instrument we have for that is the UN. It's fragile, exasperating sometimes, as I said, but if it didn't exist, we'd have to invent it, and I don't believe we could invent it.
So now, the United States has always been, if you like, the guarantor, and there are many things wrong with the United States foreign policy over the years, its activities in various countries around the world. But by and large, it has been seen as a force for good, the world's policeman, and trying to ensure some sort of order. Even when the Soviet Union was acting otherwise, China was more isolated in the past, now a main player. But given the attitude of Donald Trump now, which is, you know, making America great for itself again, and basically to hell with the rest of the world, the United Nations is badly wounded, is it not?
It is, and it's a very sad thing to see, because the United States was the major country that played the major part in founding the UN. Franklin Roosevelt, the US president, started planning for a new international organization even before the United States actually joined the war in Pearl Harbor. After Pearl Harbor in 1941, they were still at that time planning already for a post-war world, and the US played a major part in the foundation of the UN, and the UN has grown. The good thing we have to say is that despite everything, the UN Charter has become a kind of constitution for international society, because every new state that came to independence wanted to join the UN, and the first thing they had to do was accept the charter. So although it's not always observed, all countries accept it as the sort of constitution for an international order. The United States played a major part in that. And not alone that, but a whole network of organizations have grown around the UN. Specialized agencies, agencies for refugees, human rights, UNICEF, so many others, and all kinds of other organizations in more specialized functional areas have relations to the UN, and we have the panel on climate change and so on. So it's a force for immense good in the world, and it's, as I said, weak, and it needs to be strengthened. One would hope that the US, which was such an important part of the foundation of the UN, and subsequent US presidents at least helped to build it up. But unfortunately, I'm afraid, the present US president has gone in the other direction, and it's more a case of make America great again, but not too keen about the rest of the world. So it's a very sad development, but let's hope the election will produce something new.
Noel, look, thank you very much for joining us, and perhaps we'll come back to you in advance of Ireland taking up its seat on the Security Council to parse that out in the light of events and where we are in terms of remote business and all of that closer to the time. But for the moment, Noel Doerr, former Irish ambassador to the United Nations, thank you very much for joining us.